from a pastor who refused to perform a wedding because the bride was not dressed modestly, to the crisis in Syria. We've got it covered today right here.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So what do we do when there's a conflict between standing for righteousness and reaching out to the lost? How do we find our balance? What is the right response for a child of God? And what about situations where if we stand for righteousness, we might offend those within the body who may not understand or who may be more moved by compassion, and we maybe more moved by righteousness? How do we sort these things out? We're going to do it together right here on The Line of Fire. A whole lot to talk about happening in the world, happening in America. Michael Brown, your listener-sponsored voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution, ready to start a wonderful week together with you. Now, to weigh in on any of the things we're going to be talking about today, here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Or to catch up on what we're doing, to catch up on latest audios, latest video, latest articles. I wrote 5 articles over a 4-day period last week. Just go to AskDrBrown.org and click latest article, latest audio, latest video, etc. And you'll be caught up and you can stay caught up with what we are doing. Now, a whole lot of things I want to talk to you about, but one of my colleagues wrote an article, and I want to put this up for discussion with you. I want to get your feedback. She wrote an article about a pastor, apparently storefront church pastor, who was about to perform a wedding, and when it came to, came to the wedding day, and the bride showed up, and he asked her, "Where's the other half of your wedding dress?" He asked jokingly. No one really thought anything of it, and they all laughed about it, continued putting makeup on the bride, etc. And then pastor asked the leader of the church to ask the bride and the family about the other part of her dress. The bride informed the leader, "This is it." The leader reported the news to the pastor. The pastor informed personally the bride and groom at separate times he could not perform the wedding with the bride in her selected dress. The pastor told the bride she'd have to cover up her breast area and find a way to add length to the dress. The bride informed the pastor there's no way to accomplish this with so short of a notice. She has to wear her dress. Then the pastor informed her he would not be able to perform the ceremony and walk back to his office. So, pastor's ministry, 14 months old. He runs a storefront church. The question is, was he out of line for ruining this young couple's wedding day, or did he take a stand for modesty that deserves applause? Well, I read the article, and then there was a link to click, and I clicked on the link. I thought, oh, that was a mistake. That was a mistake. It was a link to the wedding dress this gal was wearing, and I thought, no way, no way whatsoever. And I wouldn't send the article out to someone else to read because of the link in it, or just tell them, read the article. It's a good article, but don't click on the link, especially if you're a man, don't click on the link. In other words, it's that bad. It's that bad. So did the pastor do the right thing? I know it's just one little instance in one little place, and there's a lot of stuff happening in the world and society. You say, why focus on that, Mike, with so much going on? Because it illustrates the issues before us. Do you stand up for what's right without making moral compromise as a child of God, as a leader, ministering to people that claim to be followers of Jesus? Or do you say, we don't want to hurt, we don't want to offend the world? It's a massive battle before us right now. If you were the pastor, would you have married this couple with this gal, dressed the way she was, and married them in the sight of God? Had your name and reputation on that? Associate your church with that? Or would you say, hey, we have to stand up for what's right?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We will be talking about Syria today. We will be talking about a conflict that's, think of it, bringing the President of the United States, bringing in the leader of Russia, the leader of China, bringing in the Pope, and all focused on what's happening in Syria, and how is that going to have implications for the rest of the world. We will talk about that later in the broadcast. We'll talk about some other things happening here in the States. 866-348-7884. First, just a sports update. You say a sports update? What in the world are you talking about with a sports update? Well, I want to share it with you. The sports update says this. I was sent this morning. Personally, this was emailed to me. The Indians lineup had no answer for Andrew Bruss. Bruss gave up just one hit, allowed no earned runs, walked none, and struck out four during his two innings of work. Now, some of you are sports fanatics. You're like, I don't know. What are you talking about? I don't remember that happening. Oh, sorry. That was Little League. Little League. This was my 9-year-old son, Andrew, came in to relieve after not having pitched for a few months, came in to relieve with the bases loaded. And that's the report. Gave up just one hit, allowed no earned runs, walked none, and struck out four during his two innings of work. Our little red-haired grandson, Andrew. And what happens is this is an automatically generated, quote, game story that all the stats get entered as the game is going on. And then this posts as an actual story. So there you have it. There you have it. Did I say son? Grandson. I said son? Yeah, all right. Grandson. Sorry about that. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, we are increasingly confronted with situations in the society where we are called to stand for righteousness. We are called to stand up for what's right. We are called to refuse to bend in this area, this area, this area. And if we do compromise, if we do bend, if we do bow down to the culture, then we've denied the Lord in certain ways. And then we have hurt those around us because we have not been salt, we have not been light. Think of it. Mordecai would not bow down to Haman. Think of it. The three Hebrew young men in Daniel, the third chapter, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego with their Babylonian names, they would not bow down to the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar set up, even if it meant their lives. Daniel would not obey the king's edict not to pray to any god in Daniel, the sixth chapter, even though it meant being thrown into the lion's den. So to stand up for what's right, to stand up for what's right is always something we're called to do. The Hebrew midwives, for example. Even if we might die, even if it might cost us everything. But what happens when we stand up for what's right, and now it hurts and offends those in the world, or it brings confusion to those who are in the world, or it paints a picture of us as if we were angry, militant, mean-spirited. You see, this is major news across America today because of what happened to the Christian couple in Oregon with their Christian-owned bakery, who said to a lesbian who wanted to have a commitment ceremony celebration, a wedding cake for her and her lesbian partner. She wanted a cake baked, and they said, no, we can't do that. That would be a violation of our First Amendment rights, our religious freedoms, and we cannot do that. Well, I've written an article saying they did the right thing. I mean, how are you going to write the names of these two people on this and say, okay, here's the wedding cake, and you maybe deliver it and say, hey, we love you, even though we don't agree with your lifestyle or we don't agree with what you're doing. We love you. No, I said it was right to not bake the cake. Other Christians have said, come on, this is our time to witness to the world. This is our time to reach out to the lost. What are people going to think about Jesus? Come on, Jesus ate with the tax collectors and the sinners. Jesus sat and ate and drank with people and was accused of being a glutton, was accused of being a wine bibber. come on. Jesus did these things and he hung out with sinners. And when we separate ourselves like this, it makes us look bad. So these questions are now coming up, and they will be coming up with increasing frequency across the country. So I think of this case in-house now with a pastor in his church that is worth bringing to attention. So one person said this: I'm sad for the bride who wanted a church wedding in a hoochie mama dress. That's the way this person described it. But even sadder for the pastor who missed his teachable moment. Well, I appreciate the sentiments. I just don't know what the teachable moment would have been. How, I mean, what if the people came in their underwear and wanted to be married? In other words, there's always a line that is drawn. And with that line, we say, okay, we cannot do that. I mean, I think everybody would agree if two people of different generations, a man and a boy, walked into the bakery and said, hey, we're going to celebrate our commitment to each other and we want a wedding cake. I said, absolutely not. That's wrong. That's gross. That's wrong. I might even try to find out more and report them if stuff's going on. I mean, so everyone agrees that there are lines that we would draw. If you knew your next door neighbors were living together out of wedlock, and they were claiming to be followers of Jesus, and they were living together out of wedlock, a man and a woman, and they said, hey, we want a wedding cake celebrating our wedding, even though we're not getting married. We're just doing this to put on a show for family members, but we have no intention of getting married. Would you bake the cake if it was dishonesty and deceit? No, I mean, these are fair questions to ask. Someone else said this: can you wear this dress on the Senate floor? Can you be a doctor and wear this dress at work? If the answer is no, then you cannot wear this to church as well. Just like the world has its proper decorum, so does the Church of Christ. Someone else said that was foolish of the pastor. Get out of the way and let somebody else do the ceremony. You don't wait till the wedding day to embarrass people in front of their family and friends. They should sue him. It's none of his business. Well, I don't know if there's an option for someone else to do it, send him to a justice of the peace, I imagine. But is he going to have the thought of checking out the wedding dress first? How is he going to find out except that day? Someone else said, I believe this pastor did the right thing. He wasn't rude. He gave them multiple chances to add to the dress. It is his right to honor God the way he sees fit. So when we have a choice between standing for righteousness and reaching out to the lost with compassion, are there black and white lines where we draw the lines? How do we make determination? 866-34-TRUTH. And this case in particular, did the pastor do the right thing? Let's start with Jackie in Nassau County on Long Island. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to say that I totally agree with your position, and I'm going to be praying for that pastor, and I want to encourage him, because I don't think the church is doing enough as far as, it's like we want so badly for the lost world to be saved that we're not teaching them about the holiness of God and about, you know, appropriateness before a holy God. And I think that pastor was absolutely correct in doing that. And he did. It was a teachable moment. It was a moment of encouragement for his flock to teach them the right way to be, you know, in society and before a holy God. And also it was a teachable moment for them so that they open up their eyes and say, wait a minute, you know, it's not all about being whatever you want and being completely, you know, who you are. It is about transforming ourselves into the holiness of God. So I personally think that the pastor was great, and I know he's going to be persecuted even by the church. But I think what he did was what he had to do. That was the right thing to do. And I wish I was close enough to that church. I would be supporting him, and I'd go to his church. I just feel like the doctrine of grace is getting muddy and murky.
Yeah.
You know, grace doesn't mean that we don't show modesty or don't have understanding for the weaker, like our brother, right? We don't dress the way we want to dress because we have grace. We dress the way we should dress because there are people who are going to be affected by how we dress, and we don't want to stumble them.
Right.
You know,
and
I just,
right. On top of that, Jackie, amen to everything you're saying. Grace is never permission to sin. Grace never lowers the standards of God. Grace reaches out to us in our lostness and sin and grants us forgiveness and then new life. If it doesn't grant us new life and transform us, how is it grace? And what if the pastor said, all right, I'll perform this wedding, and then people are going to take pictures of the wedding. They're going to, it happens. You don't just have the photographer. Everyone's pulling out cell phones, taking pictures. Now you got a picture of this guy and this couple, this gal scantily clad. What about that? What does that say for the gospel? What does that say for this person's reputation? It's one thing reaching out to lost sinners where they are. It's another thing putting our stamp on it. All right, we'll be back with your calls, and I've got comments as well.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
By the way, before we go back to your calls and before we talk through the issues of how can we stand for righteousness, upholds God's standards on the one hand, while reaching out to those who don't know the Lord or those who are weak, reaching out in compassion on the other hand, how do we balance that? Just want to mention, if you go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, just you'll see right on the home page a special announcement about our School of Cultural Engagement. We held these classes a few years back. Top apologists, top cultural leaders came in and taught about 8 hours each. And you can get each of the classes. We just slashed the price for the downloads. You can download the MP3s for $10 per class. It's ridiculously low, but our goal is to get these out. Separation of church and state, reclaiming godly sexuality, only Genesis, engaging culture, cultural apologetics, it's time to rock the boat. So just go to my website, askdrbrown.org, and click on the special resource offer. You'll see it, I think, the second slide that comes up. And you'll find this stuff really, really practical, and we are almost giving it away, no? All right, 866-348-7884. Let's continue this discussion of whether the pastor did the right thing by saying that he could not marry this woman. He could not perform the wedding ceremony because of the seductive, scantily put together wedding dress that she was wearing. And obviously it created a lot of embarrassment and then a lot of confusion in the family, and then people saying it brings reproach to the gospel and what I was going to think, and so on and so forth. And certainly people are going to call him, you know, a religious hypocrite or Pharisee in the bad sense of the word. Question is, did he do the right thing? Did he honor the Lord? The question is there a line drawn where everyone would agree, okay, you can't perform the wedding? If people came in nude, well, you can't perform the wedding, put something on. You say, well, that's extreme. Oh, okay, I'm just saying, where does one draw the line? And did Jesus ever reach out to the lost by lowering God's standards? Just asking a question. 866-34-TRUTH. Adrian in Silver Spring, Maryland, thanks so much for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, how are you?
Very, very good. I'm blessed. Thank you.
Yeah. So you know, I think the pastor did the right thing, because the whole thing is Jesus, though he ate with the tax collectors, he never took part in their sin. You know, it's like if it's a thief who snatches bags, asks you to look out for him, he wouldn't take part in that. It would be different to actually be with them and try to preach the gospel to them, but you have to draw the line somewhere, and you can't use the defense that Jesus ate with tax collectors because he didn't take part in their sin. He didn't encourage their sin. He always tried to take them away from that sin and change them.
Got it. So we can sit with sinners. We can hang out as long as we don't participate in their sin. And that would be participating in someone's sin. Then if a person came in seductively clad, it's one thing if a person came into a church service and they sat down, maybe some prostitute that was under conviction and came into the service and wasn't dressed properly, then, you know, you have some sisters sit down next to her. She's dressed, you know, she's 90% naked, and you got people in the body. Well, you know, sit down with her, show her some love, maybe say, hey, can we just put like a, you know, a blanket around you, you know, you know, just try to reach out with compassion. But you want to make that person feel welcomed and loved. But that's very different than participating in someone's sin. Adrian, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. 866-34-TRUTH. Pierre in Brooklyn, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Okay, great. My comment is, I'm looking at this from a different point of view.
Please.
We as Christians, you know, sometimes because of our conviction of the things in the world, we tend to judge really quick. Because one of the things about going to church is, like you said, you surrender your heart and not your garment. This is one thing. The other thing is, when Adam and Eve committed sin in the garden, and the voice of God was in the garden, and Adam, they took leaves and they covered themselves, and God asked them, I mean, they said, why are you hiding? You know, he said, because I was naked. You understand? Is it a shame to be naked before God because of our sins? And who's to judge that? Is it the pastor? Is it us as human beings or as Christians to judge another? Because, nakedness or kind of way of thinking in our mind as Christian or even as human beings, is that what caused the conviction of what sin is about?
Let me just ask this, though. When you say about judging, we are called, of course, to judge righteous judgment, not judge by outward appearance. What if he said, I'm not making a judgment on who you are, I'm not saying that you're trying to be a prostitute or that you're going to be an unfaithful wife. However, I'm saying that I cannot sanction this wedding, this marriage, and pronounce you in the sight of God, husband and wife, when you're dressed like that. Isn't that different from judging the individual?
Yeah, but my thing is, he's judging the dress and not the person. He's looking at the dress. The key thing is the dress. And not what the purpose was. It's not about a wedding. Now it became about a dress. And it was not about a wedding, because remember, they're marrying the people, not the dress.
All right. Well, Pierre, I appreciate you weighing in. Thank you, sir, for your comments. I do welcome people weighing in with different perspectives. So please, that's why I put the question on the table. All right? So feel free to differ with me or differ with other callers or differ with Pierre. Thank you, sir, for the call. Beth in Arlington, Virginia, we're a little short on time, so please dive right in with your perspective.
Okay. I would like to say that I think this issue highlights what God is doing in the church, and that is that there are no formulas. Even we can kill people with the word. The task is to seek His guidance, His will in every situation.
Mm-hmm.
It was very clear that he could of his own self do nothing. He did only what he saw the Father do. He did only what he heard the Father say. And in that sense, we are called to that same communion with him so that we don't judge. We judge righteous judgment. And this is an illustration of what I just said.
Got it.
Okay.
Right, so we're being driven, Beth, and sorry to jump in, but you articulated a super important point that we must be walking with the Lord and knowing the Lord well enough to be led by God and to have spiritual wisdom. Now, some would say, now the word is clear on this. Others would say, no, this is one of those judgment calls where we really need to be led by God. All right, Beth, thank you so much for sharing it. That's not hyper-spirituality to me. That I agree. We're going to be faced with that more and more in the coming days. All right. We have some books in overstock from previous broadcasts that we want to bless you, the listening audience, with. One of the most profound books that we distributed to our listeners was a 424-page book, Jesus, a Theography, by Frank Viola and Leonard Sweet. It's yours for your gift of any size. So help us, as you're able to, whatever's on your heart, to help us, and we'll send you this book as our thank you. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. Be sure to visit AskDrBrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, delighted and blessed to be with you. To get in the program, join the discussion, 866-348-7884. We are your listener-sponsored voice of moral clarity and spiritual sanity, and moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Mix them and match them. 866-348-7884. You know, you can read statistics about a war or famine, and X number of people died, X number of people starved, X number of people killed, and it's staggering. But it's often much more jarring when you read one specific individual story about one specific person. And sometimes that can be more powerful than reading the stories about millions of casualties, because we can't process that. It becomes impersonal. So when we talk about some of the cultural issues we're facing today, issues of standing for righteousness, how do we stand for righteousness at the same time we reach out with compassion? Where is the balance? How is it done? I know when it came to the issue of gay activism and homosexuality, the Lord laid on my heart this word, reach out and resist. Reach out to the people with compassion, resist the agenda with courage. And we've been able to successfully do that in many, many different levels. However, because we have resisted the activism, those people who don't know me personally in particular think of me as being hateful, mean-spirited, etc. How do we avoid that? Do we just capitulate on social and cultural issues? And when we do, then people will be more willing to listen to us about Jesus. But then when we tell them the whole message of Jesus, won't they get offended? So we're using as a case in point a pastor who said that he could not marry a couple because of the woman's bridal gown, a seductive-looking dress, very short and exposing things that shouldn't be exposed and ways that shouldn't be exposed, especially for a wedding dress. And we're discussing whether he did the right thing or not. Before I go back to your calls, our phone lines are jammed, not unexpectedly, with a subject like this. I want you to hear some responses to the bakery, Christian-owned bakery in Oregon, that said that they could not make the wedding cake for a lesbian couple. This is from the Young Turks TV broadcast. This is Desi Doyen speaking.
Well, you know, I feel bad for people that make the effort to build their own business. And, of course, I completely disagree with the way that they have chosen or that they had chosen to conduct their business. But, you know, I don't want to see anybody's business fail on the basis of, I don't know, something like that. I feel bad for them because I know how hard that is. But then again, I hate what they did, so.
All right. So a little humanity there, feel bad for them, but hate what they did. Then this is John Iadarola. Not sure if I pronounced that correctly. He's weighing in with his perspective on what happened to the Christian-owned bakery.
I don't know that I do feel bad. I mean, I think that we want companies where possible to conduct themselves in an ethical fashion. And what you were saying, I think I would feel the same way as you if this had been some sort of like you are being shut down by the state or by the federal government, which isn't what happened.
No, I think that it should be voluntarily closed. We should make that
I mean, for all we know, their business was doing before they started attacking gay. Like, we honestly don't know. And I think that if a business wants to project some sort of political message, they might very well gain based on it. Like, look at the
Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A, for instance, like there are incentives to say the right thing or the wrong thing. And I think that people should be totally free to choose to buy it at a different bakery if they want to. So I think that this is perfectly fine. And it might very well have absolutely nothing to do with their comments about gay marriage.
Yeah, in point of fact, their business was doing fine before, according to reports that I read. And the state is ready to prosecute them. You say, yeah, but if you just said, hey, we love you and Jesus loves you and bake the cake, isn't that the better way to handle it? And then people don't get upset with you and think you hate people. That's what we're facing today, friends.
Oh God of burning, cleansing flame, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I posted a quote from Keith Green yesterday. Keith, who went to be with the Lord at the age of 28 in a tragic plane accident in 1982, he said, I'd rather people hate me with the knowledge that I tried to save them. Now, obviously, we can do things in ways that are obnoxious. We can lack wisdom as we stand for what's right. We can be self-righteous and even hypocritical. But if we stand for what's right and live right, we will be hated and misunderstood. 866-348-7884. By the way, even though for most all of you listening, except those listening in Australia, this is a distant issue. The current Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, had really aggressively given pro-gay marriage speeches and made clear he was going to be pushing this down everyone's throat. Well, he's voted out. A conservative party has been voted in quite dynamically, I would say, and does send a message, interestingly enough, on many issues. 866-348-7884. Let's go back to the phones. Rochelle in Arlington, Virginia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, this is actually Raquel.
Okay.
You there? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm so discouraged hearing some of the people talk and reading some of those comments online. And, you know, the point is that the Spirit of the Lord is what convicts people and brings them to the Lord. And, you know, the world knows that the church...
Hey, tell you what, Raquel, just hang on there. We're having a problem with your phone connection. Dwight, if you can get back on with Raquel to see if we can figure out what's happening. I want people to be able to hear Raquel and what she's saying. All right, let's go to Rachel. All right, it's going to go to Rachel in Boston. Let's go to Pastor Mondesir in Boston. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Oh, thank you, and I appreciate the work that you're doing. I called in support of that pastor. I don't know him, and I don't know the scenario if that couple is a member of that church. But I think this is something also that pastors need to be a little bit more aware of, that who they're serving, members of the church or the public. Because there is a way that Christians are called to handle situations in their church. If I think that, you know, my sister, my brother sins, I should not take it to the public. I should take it to the brother and the sister. And so if that couple were from the church, I assume that they were not. They should first speak with the pastor. And, of course, the pastor would have known them already, and they would know how they would dress or carry themselves. But given that he would not ask to see the dress, so he did the appropriate thing to say, well, you get a chance to do it a little bit differently, because the Bible is our frame of reference. It's not the world. And so people may feel angry, may have different reactions towards
right.
them or toward how Christians behave, but they...
So
they,
Pastor, in this case where someone was not, a member of the church, but they just asked for the pastor to marry them, would it have been his responsibility then, if they're unsafe people, to discuss, okay, I am a pastor, this is a church wedding, therefore, I'm asking you to dress appropriately? Or if they came in dressed inappropriately because they were not believers and he didn't have this discussion before, is it his responsibility to just go ahead and perform the wedding because of his lack of preparation?
No, I would say the exact same way he handles it, whether that was the member of their church, which I don't believe so, because given how he handles that, member of the church would have known. But given that the way that this situation went, I would assume that maybe that was someone asking him to perform. And as a pastor of that church, I think he took the appropriate stand. And I believe that too many times that you find Christians who are willing to bend over or to dilute the message.
Got it.
Compassionately, yeah. he told them he would perform the marriage, but he wanted them to know that there is a standard, there's a frame of reference. So
right.
I believe that this is the standard that many Christians nowadays need to take, as a model.
Right. All right. Thank you, sir, for weighing in as a pastor. I appreciate that. And again, the question is, if the person was part of the body, part of the fellowship, or whether they were just from the world looking for someone to perform a wedding. And there are churches that are asked to do it. Some pastors say, unless you're part of our body, I can't do it. Or unless you're believers, I can't do it. Everyone works that out differently. By the way, before I go back to your phone calls, let me just say two things. How about we agree that we as believers live right? How about we all agree that we as believers walk in holiness and purity? How about we as believers agree that as followers of the Lord, we should look different than the world in many ways? In other words, there are things that are seductive. There are things that are immodest. I understand there are debates about where lines are to be drawn, and you don't make people holy from the outside in. You make them holy from the inside out. But I'm saying if we've really encountered the Lord, there should be changes in areas of our lives if our lives are wrong. That's one thing. And then just a little comment, kind of a throwaway comment. We're not going to focus on this. Well, we may. I may get the phone lines jammed with this. But Nancy and I have often wondered, why is it at weddings that this is the time, especially the bride or the bridesmaids, why is this a time to dress less modestly than you do the rest of the year and to show off more skin? Isn't that the time to really shine forth in a beautiful, holy modesty? I'm talking about to us as believers. All right, Raquel in Arlington, I think the problem was on our end, but welcome back to the Line of Fire. You were talking about what's grieving you in this situation, so please, back to you.
Good, thank you. Thank you. You can hear me all right now, right?
Loud and clear. Yes, ma'am.
Excellent, excellent. The devil always has a way of cutting down the saints, what they want to say, huh? You know, I wanted to say that I was grieved because you're right. This is so, there are so many people who call themselves Christians. We're so diverse in this area. And, you know, people want to be modern and get tattoos and wear short skirts and cleave and say that they still love the Lord. And that you had an earlier caller talk about grace. You know, it's not about grace that James gives us a law of liberty. And we have that law of liberty, but Paul tells us that we're not to use that law of liberty for our own selfish purposes. Mm. And, you know, the pastor was 100% right for a couple of reasons. I was trying to read online some of the comments and the book more about the story because I didn't hear all about it. And so I didn't know if this was accurate or not, but I read that the church was really strict on jewelry and makeup and such. And I have two things to say about that. One, I don't know if I would want to get married in a church that was legalistic like that. And so that's the responsibility of the people who went to that church to get married. And I'm not saying that he was legalistic. I'm just saying, you know, obviously this girl was not a member of this church. And yeah. I also hold that responsibility to the pastor as well. You know, my dad... as a minister was, and I remember that he has very strict principles on when somebody would ask him, can you marry us? And he would say, only if X, Y, and Z. And you said something earlier, it's pretty shocking. Who expects somebody to show up on their wedding day looking like they're going to a club? It is shocking.
Right. Now here's the thing. Because according to the story, he's been in ministry or this church is only 14 months old, this is certainly a learning experience in terms of, okay, next time we go through guidelines, next time we lay out X, Y, Z. But, you know, Raquel, what you mentioned, which is really important, is this, that on the one hand, grace teaches us to be holy. Grace empowers us to be holy. Liberty is liberty from sin, not liberty to sin. Jesus sets us free from sin. He doesn't set us free to sin. So when people watch all kinds of trashy movies with ungodly scenes and horrific stuff that you couldn't dare think of, say, showing in a big screen to a church group, they say, well, I'm free. No, no, you're free to be holy, not free to sin. At the same time, just setting up a bunch of outward standards doesn't do it. Just saying, well, man, if you wear a wristwatch, then you're in sin because that's immodest, that's jewelry. That does not address heart issues or really touch on true modesty. And that's why these things have to be walked out based on principle and the wisdom of the Spirit. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Sarah in Brooklyn. Thank you so much for calling, Sarah.
Oh, dear Dr. Brown, I'm so happy that as I listen every day, as an Orthodox Jewish lady for many years, you know I accepted Jesus on my 89th birthday. Now, what about the dress code? in Orthodoxy, cover here. It has to do with no pants. It has to do, of course, the neck and the elbows and the length of the skirt. Mm-hmm. So what is no pants, no slacks? So could you help me know as a Christian, expect as a Jew accepting Jesus,
yes,
what is my modesty rules now?
All right. Stay right there, Sarah. You've asked a perfect question. And as soon as we come back on the other side of the break, I want to address this issue of, are there dress codes? Orthodox Jews have dress codes. Do we have Christian dress codes?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on the Line of Fire. Friends, to stay in touch with what we're doing, all the new articles that I'm writing every week, new videos we're putting out, new audio, new blog updates, just go to my website, askdrbrown.org. I think I'm going to be posting, and you can click there, latest audio, video, etc. I think I'm going to be posting this lengthy interaction I had with a counter-missionary rabbi friend that started kind of unexpectedly late Saturday night. And it's gone to multiple pages, could be 10 pages long. I pulled it out from Facebook. I may post that on my blog later today. So to follow that, just go to askdrbrown.org and click on the latest blog. All right, we are speaking to one of our favorite caller friends, Sarah from Brooklyn. Jesus knocked at the door of her heart as an Orthodox Jewish woman when she turned 89, the surprise of her life, and she's been following Jesus ever since. So Sarah, one of the biggest differences between Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox Judaism and the New Testament is that Judaism has basically a law and a custom for everything. You know, you say this prayer at this time of the day, and then here's when you can interrupt the prayer, here's where you can't interrupt the prayer. You know, the dress code is this, 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 this. The dietary laws are this, 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 and this. And with the gospel, it's not so. There are principles laid out. There are principles and standards laid out. For example, we're encouraged to always be praying and in a prayerful attitude. But aside from a model prayer that Jesus teaches us, we're not told pray these words at this time of the day. The same with dress code, with modesty. It says, Paul writes, I want women to dress modestly, with decency and propriety, adorning themselves not with elaborate hairstyles or gold or pearls or expensive clothes, but with good deeds appropriate for women who profess to worship God. So, Sarah, the principle is simplicity. The principle is modesty. The principle is to put more of an emphasis on good deeds and good works than on outward appearance. And then elsewhere, we're told about the danger of someone dressing seductively or trying to cause someone to sin. So those are the guidelines. So we don't have a specific set of rules, but guidelines that a woman would ask herself, if I dress like this, will it cause other men to stumble? If I dress like this, will it cause other men to lust after me? And again, men are going to lust anyway. If they're not disciplined, they're going to lust anyway. But there are things that a woman could do to dress more modestly. She could ask herself, am I trying to draw attention to my figure so that men will be attracted to me? Or am I seeking to dress in a way that I can look good and glorify the Lord? And am I putting more emphasis on the inside or more emphasis on the outside? And that's part of walking in the Spirit. You know, Sarah, it's interesting. We've talked to folks that have been ultra-Orthodox, you know, from the day of their birth, and they learned everything. You do this, you do this, you do this. And then they became followers of Jesus, and they wanted us to tell them the exact same thing. Pray this prayer this time of the day. Read these scriptures. And we told them, you know, it's more about a relationship. if you can develop a deeper relationship, then these things will fall into place. So does that make sense, Sarah? We have the godly principles and the Holy Spirit leads us as opposed to a specific dress code?
It makes a lot of sense because I learned, even with the dress code, but now with my new dimension of reality, when I look in the mirror and I have a sense of acceptance and saying, Sarah, everything is put together. And now with my new dimension of reality, when I get dressed, I will ask my holy inner Jesus, and I will get the answer. Is that a good answer?
Oh, that Sarah, that is a wonderful answer, and it brings a big smile to all of our faces. Thank you for listening regularly, and stay in touch, and always let us know how we can be a blessing and help to you. God bless you, Sarah. Appreciate that. Let's go to Rachel. We lost Rachel in Boston, gave her a second tie, lost her again. Gail in Brooklyn. Lost Gail in Brooklyn. It's a plague breaking out. Reverend Christian in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown, for taking my call. I just want to weigh in a little bit. And my comment is this, that I think what we have come down to is selfishness. Because the lady dressing the way she dressed, I believe she's not considering other, if at all she's a Christian, because the Bible is clear that we are our brother's keeper. But if you are not a brother's keeper, you are only concerned about yourself. So, and I think the whole thing is selfishness. And that's what we really need to understand about this whole thing. Thank you
so
much.
If this person was not a believer, then that's one thing. But you're exactly right, sir. The spirit of selfishness is about me. It's not about God. It's not about others. It's about me. That's what's plaguing the Church of America today. Thank you for nailing that. All right, let's try to get one more call. Sam in Brooklyn. All right. Well, I won't try to get one more call. I'll stop right there. Our listeners got intercepted last minute. Okay, friends, I want to encourage you to look at your own life and to simply ask the question, am I living in a way that pleases the Lord? If you've known the Lord for a month or for 30 years, am I bringing glory to Him by my lifestyle? Oh, if you are super sensitive in your conscience and you are easily convicted to the point that you think, oh man, I didn't love my neighbor sufficiently today, I'm going to hell. Well, I really encourage you to bask in the love of God and to recognize the goodness of God and to recognize how deeply the Father loves you and cares for you. And out of that, then say, Lord, I really want to love you back and glorify you. My book, Hyper Grace, will be out in just a few months. It addresses so many of these critically important issues in terms of grace and law and the life of the believer. But right now, let's put our emphasis on being in such good fellowship with the Lord that we reflect His life. And I want to encourage you to stand with us today. My gift of appreciation to you for your gift of any size is an extraordinary book called Jesus, a Theography. It starts in eternity past and goes to eternity future. A unique book co-authored by Leonard Sweet and Frank Viola. We had Frank on the show to talk about it, Frank Viola. And it's a 424-page hardcover volume. It's an amazing read. It's almost like reading a devotional book in tremendous depth. And it's yours for your gift of any size. So stand with us. Help us as you're able. Our supplies are unlimited. But I believe we can certainly offer this today. Your gift of any size, so first come, first serve, as we only have a certain number in stock. Call us at 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line is simply this. Before we point our finger at the world and at weak believers, let us look in the mirror and say, Lord, does my life bring maximum glory to your name? from a pastor who refused to perform a wedding because the bride was not dressed modestly to the crisis in Syria. We've got it covered today right here.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, things are happening all over the world of momentous import, momentous proportion. It's one of those seasons where you feel so much shaking. And across America, the first hour, I focused on a specific situation that raised the question of when do we as believers stand for righteousness? How does that affect us versus reaching out to the lost with compassion? Often there's a conflict there. We spent an hour talking about it. We could have spent 5 hours with all the calls coming in. But we're switching to a subject of international importance, namely the situation in Syria, the question of what America should do right now with the president poised to address the nation, with Vladimir Putin weighing in, with leadership of China weighing in, with the Pope weighing in. And you get to weigh in as well. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I'm not going to review this situation there because I assume you know what's happening in Syria and the question of who actually used chemical weapons, horrific gas attacks on citizens, men, women, children dying horrific deaths. Did Assad order it? Oh, did it come from elsewhere in his government? Was it the so-called rebels, freedom fighters that were involved? And what should our response be? I am joined by Avi Lipkin, also known as Victor Mordecai, born in Flushing, New York, but moved to Israel at the age of 19 in August 1968. He has studied at Hebrew University as well as Jewish Theological Seminary. 1989, 1990, Avi worked as a senior editor and translator in the news department of the government press office as part of Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir's office at Beit Agron, and he's appeared on hundreds of radio and TV shows worldwide, written a number of books. We'll talk about them in a moment. But Avi, you're in the States right now, and so glad you could join us on The Line of Fire.
Good to be back on your show, Mike.
So, Avi, just if we could start here and just take a minute or two to give us the perspective, if there is such a thing, of the average Israeli, how they feel about America bombing Syria or getting involved in the conflict there.
Well, the average viewpoint of the Israeli is basically leave us alone. You know, we're not part of the battle in Syria. We're not for the Shiites. We're not for the Sunnis. You know, let them work it out themselves. But there are, of course, those who say that the picture is a much broader picture involving the termination of the Iranian nuclear threat. Mm-hmm. So this is another aspect that we need to look at. And the third aspect, of course, is that the Saudis, the Sunnis, have the money, have the oil. The American economy is tied directly to that money and oil. And since you've heard, of course, of the one world government, since the one world government approaches steady oil prices and steady oil supplies, and the Saudis are a key player here, you're going to do what the Saudis say. And what they say is terminate the Shiite regime in Syria, terminate the Shiite regime in Iran, and bring about a revolution in intra-Islamic affairs. And so these are the three levels.
All right. So, Avi, your website, we got a whole lot to talk about and unpack, but before our break, what's your website that folks can go to?
Yes, the website is www.vicmord, half of Victor, which is V-I-C, half of Mordecai, which is M-O-R-D.com. And indeed, I've got 6 books and 10 CDs and 10 DVDs, and I've got books in a book in German. I've got DVDs in Spanish.
All right, so we come back. We'll find out more about what's happening. We'll unpack this. Friend, do you think we should take action? Do you think we should get involved in Syria? 866-34-TRUTH. And the website, VicMord.com.
Give us It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest, Avi Lipkin, also goes by the alias Victor Mordecai. His website, Vic Mord, that's VicMord.com. A lot of important information about Islam, about Israel, representing some very strong views that you need to look at and examine and evaluate. My question for you, our listeners, do you feel that it's important that we send a message to Syria and to the world saying use of chemical weapons does cross a line? We're convinced it came from the Assad regime, and therefore we are going to take punitive action to send a message and thereby send a message to Iran, don't you dare try to develop nuclear weapons? Or is this just one more mistake? Are we just getting involved in a civil war between Muslims? 866-34-TRUTH. Before we get more input from Avi Lipkin, let's just listen to these two clips from Bashar Assad being interviewed by Charlie Rose.
Will it be attacks against American bases in the Middle East if there is an airstrike?
You should expect everything. You should expect everything. Not necessarily through the government. It's not only, the governments are not the only player in this region. You have different parties, you have different factions, you have different ideology. You have everything in this region now. So you have to expect that. Expect every action.
All right. Now, is he admitting, though, that yes, indeed, he authorized the use of chemical weapons against his own people?
That reminds me about what Kerry said, about the big lie that Colin Powell said in front of the world on satellites about the WMD in Iraq before going to war, when he said, this is our evidence. He gave false evidence. In this case, Kerry didn't even present any evidence. He told we have evidence, and he didn't present anything. Not yet, nothing so far.
Well, the United...
Not single shred of evidence.
All right. My guest, Avi Lipkin, has lived in Israel for decades, is on the front lines of the conflicts in the Middle East and the conflicts with Islam. Avi, should we believe anything that a Muslim dictator in the Middle East is telling us? Is this just posturing? What's your gut level when you hear quotes like this?
Well, I don't know if you remember a guy by the name of Saddam Hussein, and he said that if America would attack him, he would burn half of Israel off the face of the earth. And he did send 39 Scuds, but praise God, actually only one person died from a direct hit. But he was finished off. It took time. He was finished off. It was done later. The Arabic leaders are very pompous, and they say outrageous things. You have to take them seriously, but very often these pompous words do not happen. And as you probably may remember, Israel did attack three or four different sites or convoys of weapons that were intended for Hezbollah. And Israel had warned Syria about this. And yep. Israel attacked these places. And then the Syrians said they were going to retaliate, and they didn't. So many times the retaliation comes later. Some people say Saddam Hussein sent 39 Scuds into Israel during Desert Storm as a result of the attack on Iraq 10 years before. That Israel took out the Iraqi nuclear program in 1981. So this is in 1991. So, you know, like they're saying in the Middle East, you have to be very patient.
Got it. All right. What about breaking down this conflict between Sunni and Shia? This Sunni Muslims and the Shiite Muslims, Iraq, say, as one example, largely Sunni, Shiite minority, the exact opposite, massively so in Iran, in Saudi Arabia, Sunni Muslims make up what, roughly 85% to 90% of Muslims worldwide. Explain the dynamics of this conflict as it works out in a country like Syria. You alluded to this at the beginning, but who are the players involved? And you know, we read in America, you get the freedom fighters fighting against this corrupt regime. Obviously, that's an oversimplification.
Very correct. Let's go one by one. Syria is a country which is 10% Shiite Alawite, 10%. And the government is run by that 10%. Allied with the 10% are the Christians of Syria, who are 10%. That gives Bashar 20% of the population. Then there are small groups known as the Druze and the Kurds, minorities, and they are with Bashar. And then there is about 20% of the population, which is Sunni, but they are considered the power elites as part of Bashar Assad's regime. So Syria basically is 50% the Bashar al-Assad regime, which does include Sunnis. And then you have, of course, the opposition, which are entirely Sunnis. And then the question is, within the entirely Sunnis, who are the so-called moderates, who are the so-called Democrats, and then who are the so-called Al-Qaeda and the other more fanatic groups there? And there are many fanatic groups circulating there among the resistance, among the rebels. So it's a mess. It's many, many different factions, and they're all fighting each other. And you said very correctly about Iraq. Iraq was a country led by Saddam Hussein, who was a Sunni Arab. He represented 20% of the population. So, again, it's not like America where you have majority rule. In Iraq, 20% rules over 60%, which is Shiite, and 20%, which is Kurdish. That's a mess, too. And in the end, when the U.S. forces came in, the end result was America not only created the fanatic Shiite regime in Iran under Jimmy Carter, but George W. Bush, the Republican, created the fanatic Shiite state under al-Maliki, who is an ally of the Iranians. So America basically turned its two best allies into its two worst enemies in the Islamic world. So today what we're seeing is that the al-Qaeda, who are Sunnis, are coming from Iraq into Syria to kill the Shiites and the other minorities, Christians especially. Then you've got the Shiite Iranians backing the Shiite Iraqis to go in and back the Shiite Alawite, Hezbollah, and the regime, you know, Bashar al-Assad. So that's a mess. So Iraq is a mess. Syria is a mess. Of course, Lebanon is a mess because Lebanon is considered merely a province of Syria. And there, too, you got 28% Christians. You got 40% Shiite Hezbollah-type people. And then the rest are Sunnis and Druze. And so it's a mess. It's a composite of all these different minority groups. All fighting each other. And, you know, in Islam, there is no love. In Islam, there is no forgiveness. And in Islam, which is supposedly meaning peace, there is no peace. So what we're going to see basically is, here's some Bible reading for your listeners, 2 Chronicles chapter 20, and which is, by the way, Old Testament, but Christians taught me that. And it's basically about three armies besieging Jerusalem, and basically the three armies then turn on each other and self-destruct. And God reshuffles the deck. And I always talk about God reshuffling the deck because every time the U.S. government or some European government or some Islamic government or Russia or China, anytime people turn against Israel, they have a mess on their hands.
All right, Avi, before we break down even a few more of these issues here and get even further clarity, the two questions I want to raise. One, are you saying, broadly speaking, that America has lacked foresight in terms of its actions in the Middle East region? And we see what happened with Afghanistan. And I remember thinking that, boy, Russia's in there. They shouldn't be in there. And these freedom fighters are doing a good job getting Russia out, you know, so naively without recognizing the dynamics of who the, quote, freedom fighters, the Mujahideen, were. So that's my first question to you. I want to honor and respect every American who has lost a loved one or has lost a part of their body in the war. We have sought to do the right thing, but the question has to be asked, have we lacked foresight in our policy with regard to the Muslim world?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I think I have an excellent answer for you. Do you remember President Bill Teflon Clinton? President Clinton had a sign over the Oval Office desk which would say, hey, it's the economy, stupid. Do you remember that, sir?
Of course.
Okay, so in other words, what does Jesus teach us? Jesus teaches us either you serve the Lord or you serve mammon. You cannot have two masters. And I'm going to say something which breaks my heart to say. America is not a Christian country. America is a mammon country. Washington is a mammon city. It's a mammon administration. And if you're talking about the U.S. government behaving in a conscientious manner, from the perspective of mammon, it is absolutely on track. And the reason is because, for many reasons, you have been allied with Saudi Arabia. If they kill 6 million Jews in the Holocaust, that's okay. If they kill millions of black people in Africa, that's okay. And now, if there's a Holocaust, which is going to kill 15 million Christians in the Middle East, that's okay, too. Because why? Because the Saudis dictate to the United States government what to do, because it's all about money. It's all about economics. And Americans, forgive me for saying it, you know, Americans are addicted to the highest living standards in the world. That takes money. You need steady oil prices, steady oil supplies. That takes money. And therefore, you're going to work with the Saudis. The Iranians are people who are threatening to destroy the world economy, threatening to destroy the United States by denying the West oil and their cash. The Saudis.
All right, let me just jump in. We'll pick this up on the other side of the break. Get the book, Victor Mordecai, Is Fanatic Islam a Global Threat? That's my guest, Avi Lipkin, a.k.a. Victor Mordecai. Is Fanatic Islam a Global Threat? Go to VicMord, VicMord.com.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I do want to get to some calls in a little while and hear from you, our listeners, about your take. We've talked about this over the last couple of weeks, but now more specifically as the president's going to be addressing the nation this week. Do we want to get involved in Syria? Do we want to get involved bombing them, saying, hey, we're not going to look the other way. We will not look the other way when chemical weapons are used, weapons of mass destruction are used, and we will send a message. Is that another mistake to do so? 866-34-TRUTH. My guest, Avi Lipkin, a.k.a. Victor Mordecai. His book that perhaps is the most relevant is Fanatic Islam, A Global Threat. Avi, before the break, you said something that was very, very strong. You're saying it as a man who's lived in Israel, Israeli citizen for decades now. But I've heard this charge made many a time. It's all about the oil. So we hear about the slaughter of Christians in different parts of the world, ongoing atrocities in Sudan against Christians, and massive numbers have lost their lives. And then terrible persecution of Christians in other countries, in Iraq, in Egypt, in Syria. I mean, we're talking about a bloodbath, and yet we say almost nothing. And now this gas attack, and now we're up in arms about it. Is it simply an oil issue, and one thing ties in with Saudi Arabia, the other doesn't? Let me just challenge you and say, isn't that an extremely harsh materialistic thing to say? I mean, what gives you the right to say it's all about the oil? We've sent our kids over there, overseas, to fight and to die. Aren't we fighting for liberty? Aren't we fighting for freedom? Aren't we fighting for a good cause? How do you respond?
Well, it's a very painful answer that I have to give to you. My wife, Rachel, is Jewish, like I am Jewish, but I'm an American. And she's Egyptian. And we met at Hebrew University in Jerusalem. We live in Israel. Our kids are Israelis. My wife, because she knows Arabic, she works for the Israeli Kol Israel radio services in the Arabic monitoring department. She monitors the broadcasts on radio, TV, cable networks, computers, newspapers. And she's been doing this for the last 30 years. And one of the, I can give you a whole show, a whole hour on things that she's picked up, which are not spoken about in the American media. The Saudis were saying, we will pay the Americans handsomely. We will prop up their economy. We will prop up Wall Street. We will supply them with oil. And they will be our mercenaries in Afghanistan. They will send their boys and girls to give up their lives, give up their arms and limbs, fight for us as mercenaries, and therefore we will keep the American economy going because we do not have an army. The Americans will do the fighting for us. So this is a very cynical thing to say, but it's very realistic. And as you said at the very beginning of the show, and I praise you for saying it, and I stand 100% with you, that yes, we must praise our boys and girls who go off to these countries and represent America and fight for freedom. The problem is that there is a much more cynical agenda behind everything, and it's about money and oil. Follow the money trail.
Right, and you've pointed at Republicans and Democrats alike. All right, my second question that I wanted to get out, and then we'll delve into to more of these specifics and get some listener feedback as well. We hear about Alawites. We hear about Bashar Assad being, quote, Christian. What does that actually mean? Certainly, the Christian population of Iraq was safer under Saddam Hussein, as murderous a man as he was. That's the speculation that it would be the same in Syria, that if Assad goes down, then that would bring further persecution for Christians. But in what sense is Bashar Assad a Christian, and who are the Alawites?
I've never heard Bashar Assad being called a Christian. He's Alawite, and his family, his tribe, his region in the northwest of Syria, Latakia, Tartus, these areas are Alawite, traditionally Alawite areas. And I'll pull a cat out of the cat out of the hat, you know, or a rabbit out of the hat. 31% of Turkey is Shiite Alawite. In other words, the Alawite area of Syria borders on the Alawite areas of Turkey. And if you remember the demonstrations that were taking place in Istanbul a few weeks ago, the Turkish government said that the foreign government was meddling in the internal affairs of Turkey. They weren't talking about Israel. They were talking about Iran. Iran is saying to Turkey, if you want to play around with the Sunni agenda against us, the Shiites, we will know how to meddle and interfere in your internal affairs of Turkey by going to our Shiite believers in Turkey against the Sunni government. So I probably the Middle East is a complete mess. But regarding Bashar al-Assad, I want to go back a moment and share something with your listeners. I think they might not have heard of something called the Ba'ath Party, B-A-A-T-H. Now, Saddam Hussein was a Sunni, but they had the Ba'ath Party in Iraq. Syria also has the Ba'ath Party, and that's the party of Bashar al-Assad, and it's mostly dominated not by Sunnis, but by Shiites. Now, what they have in common is that the Ba'ath Party of Iraq and Syria are semi-Nazi or quasi-Nazi, quasi-communist, quasi-socialist governments, and being such, they actually behave very kindly, relatively, to their Christians. They protected their Christians. And they are Saddam Hussein was overthrown by a fanatic Shiite group with the help of the United States. And then even the Al-Qaeda, which is Sunni in Iraq, came against Saddam Hussein. So it boils down to a religious struggle between Shiites and Sunni. Same in Syria. Syria has a Ba'ath regime, which always protected its Christians. Don't forget, Christians are 10% in Syria and 28% in Lebanon. And if and when Bashar falls, then he will be replaced by a fanatic Sunni regime, which will basically, God forbid, I say this, God forbid, will annihilate the Christian population of Syria and Lebanon.
All right, Avi, I had asked you to come on for 10 or 15 minutes. I appreciate you spending almost a half hour with us. Which of your books would you recommend most for our listeners in the midst of what's happening now in the Middle East? Which would you most recommend?
Well, of course, my first book, which is the bestseller of all six of my books, is Fanatic Islam, A Global Threat. And that book also did predict 9/11 4 years before it happened. But my fifth and sixth books, I think, are particularly important. My fifth book is called Islam Prophesied in Genesis. And I got a three-year jail sentence in Switzerland for saying this message, that Islam is not a religion but a criminal psychosis, and that Allah is not God. Allah is Satan, Lucifer, the devil himself. So this explains, from God's word in Genesis, why Islam is such a criminal thing, a psychosis. And then my sixth book predicts the defeat of Islam, and that's based on the book of Exodus. And it's called Return to Mecca, because I say the Jews and Christians are going to return to Mecca when the Arab Spring killed the king of Saudi Arabia and the royal family in this complete meltdown. So I would really recommend both the fifth and the sixth books as well. Because these books give a very religious, very close theological perspective as to the nature of the beast. Yeah. So.
And so, friends, go to VicMord.com. Check these things out and then wrestle through what he presents. Hey, if you're able, we're out of time, but if you're able, send me a copy of Return to Mecca. I've not seen that, and perhaps we can have you back on to talk about that in a further show. But thanks for joining us, sir. And may God's grace be with you. Appreciate it. All right, we're going to come back and take your calls. I've got some audio clips to play as well. 866-34-TRUTH. Do we get involved with Syria or not? You folks are up next.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
These are the voices of protesters, hundreds of Americans, many with Syrian and Middle Eastern roots, marched from the White House to Capitol Hill on Saturday to protest President Obama's push for a military strike on Syria. And according to one individual moved to the USA from Syria 7 years ago, now a US citizen, she said this: "We're here to say no to war because war is destruction. War is more blood, and we're tired of war." Well, isn't this a way to send a message to Bashar Assad and to stop war? Isn't this a message to tell him you cannot use chemical weapons on your own people? Or should we learn from what's happened in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other countries and just keep our hands off? 866-348-7884. The first half hour of this hour, I spoke with Avi Lipkin, an American Israeli citizen, lived in Israel since the late 60s, and he says it's all about the oil, that if you just follow the oil trail, if you just see what is in America's best oil interest, that's why we do what we do, and we basically are subservient to Saudi Arabia because of our oil dependency on them and the world economy dependent on Saudi oil. And Saudi Arabia does not have some massive army and weaponry that's going to be used to defend themselves against the attacks of those they don't like the Iranians, etc. So is it that simple? Or we could say, what would Jesus do? The problem is America is not a Christian nation. In other words, we are not a theocracy and Jesus is our head and we just submit to him and pray and he fights for us. So what's the right thing for us to do? I want to go to your calls in a moment, 866-348-7884. But this clip is getting a lot of play. Here is a woman very upset with John McCain regarding Syria at a town hall meeting that he held. Let's listen to what she has to say, and then I want to get your take on this.
Yes, ma'am. You are very eager.
Hi, Senator McCain. My name is Jumana, and I met you years ago, and I've always been a loyal supporter of you. No one's denying there's a lot of atrocities being committed in Syria, whether on the rebel side or whether on the other side as well. The point is, there is a good option to what could happen in Syria. For me to listen to you saying there's no good option, I refuse to believe that. The good option right now is to take Saudi Arabia and Iran and force them to stop supporting the two sides in Syria. And you could do it. You can do it by diplomacy and negotiation, not bombs, Senator McCain. We cannot afford to shed more Syrian blood. Personally speaking, I have a cousin who is 18 years old, just was killed 10 days ago by the so-called rebels and Al-Qaeda, and they're not Syrian. They're coming to Syria from all over the world to fight this. We cannot afford to do that. We cannot afford to turn Syria into another Iraq.
All right. The question is, can diplomatic means achieve that? Can we put sufficient pressure on Saudi Arabia, which is backing the so-called rebels and freedom fighters, and Iran, which is backing the Syrian government? Do we have diplomatic clout? Does the world have diplomatic clout? Or is that wishful thinking? Or will some bombing stop or lessen the shedding of blood in Syria? As soon as we come back, we are going to your calls about Syria, and we'll do our best to give you some wisdom, however we can approach it, give you some wisdom from the Word of God. Stay tuned.
Change the world.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, Pope Francis gathers 70,000 in mass for peace in Syria. On Saturday, 70,000 people gathered at St. Peter's Square in Vatican City following the invitation of Pope Francis to a mass. Here's an interesting typo on the, this is actually on the MSNBC website from whence this was posted. It says to a mess. I'm looking at it. It's in front of my eyes. It's printed up for me. Mass was incorrectly spelled as mess. So it was a mess for restoring peace in Syria, according to the report. Appreciate the Pope's sentiments in doing that, calling for prayer. Not happy to see him praying to Mary in the process. 866-34-TRUTH. But we're not going to make this whole show about Mary. I'm looking at an article, USA Today. Some are pointing to Old Testament passages that predict the destruction of Damascus and a civil war in Egypt. I want to assure you that Isaiah 17 is not primarily pointing to what's happening in Damascus today. It points to something that happened over 2,700 years ago. And opposition to Syrian airstrikes is surging. This a report from Pew Research today. Over just the past week, the share of Americans who oppose U.S. airstrikes in Syria has surged 15 points, from 48% to 63%. Just 28% favor U.S. military airstrikes against Syria in response to reports that its government used chemical weapons. Are we just ignoring this because we say, hey, this is Muslims killing Muslims, what are we going to do? Or are we saying, don't get involved because there's no good guy, bad guy? Or are we saying, come on, we've lost so many of our of the lives of our people in Afghanistan and Iraq, and we haven't resolved anything in a positive way in those countries. What are we doing here? The response, though, very, very strongly against going to war in any way. And even after our president speaks, it will be interesting to see how many Americans are turned by the emotionally jarring sight of the effects of chemical weapons. 866-34-TRUTH. What do you have to say? Let's start in Bradenton, Florida with Chad. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Can you hear me okay, Doc?
Yes, I can, sir.
All right. Thanks for taking my call. Look, a couple of things. First of all, real quick, I was in Afghanistan in 2002. The United States Army Infantry, okay? The Mujahideen are the Northern Alliance. The overwhelming majority of Mujahideen are still the good guys from the 1980s to now, the ones that fought the Russians. Osama bin Laden and his cohorts are a branch off. They're a break off of the Mujahideen. I don't know. Back to me, that was, what, 11 years ago? As I recall it correctly, about 70, 80% of the Mujahideen, you know, they stayed with their with a good, ethical, strong want of freedom against communism. And as a matter of fact, their leader, that leader of the Northern Alliance, was former Mujahideen. He was murdered a few years ago, assassinated. But I just wanted to point that out. Mujahideen, for the most part, were the good. Was Osama bin Laden Mujahideen? Yes, he was. Absolutely.
So you're saying that the Taliban that broke away from them are, in your view, the bad guys, but that's not the majority of the so-called freedom fighters.
That's absolutely correct. And you can, there's several ways you can do it. I think the best way you can do it is just get in touch with the State Department or the United States Army, for that matter, and they'll
there is a lot of debate about who birthed Osama bin Laden, and is the United States indirectly or directly responsible for birthing him and his movement, and how much did we birth Taliban? So that's a whole other thing. But the other point you wanted to make,
Osama bin Laden, we did help him, but he turned on us, whereas most of the Mujahideen didn't turn on us. Okay, the other point about Syria. You know, I look at this and I say to myself, Benghazi, the NSA, the APY, phones being tapped, all this horrible stuff is going on in this country, $17 trillion debt. And then I look at all of a sudden the most peaceful, they call him the peacenik of the Senate. And John Kerry, the guy that talked about how war was always wrong back in the late 60s, it was never right. You know, about Genghis Khan and the horrible things that American soldiers did. Now, all of a sudden, these two guys are big warmongers.
and they want to get us involved in something that could easily turn into World War III. I mean, I just put my hand to my head. It's, first of all, not worth it. Second of all, it's a civil war. I mean, when we had our civil war, should England have gotten involved? Should Germany have gotten involved? By all means, no. It's a conflict that's going on between two nasty guys. And actually, the people that were gassed, this is Obama again. He wants to support Al-Qaeda. You want to talk about people that are affiliated with Al-Qaeda. The people that gassed are affiliated with Al-Qaeda. I want to say one more thing. Your show is magnificent. I am educated by you on a daily basis. And you don't make Jesus a Santa Claus-type figure. You make him what he really was, someone that will give us freedom from hell, providing that we are good Christians and we do the right thing after we've accepted him as our Lord and Savior. I just want to thank you for that teaching, because most people don't teach that today.
Well, Chad, yeah, thank you so much for weighing in and for your passionate comments as well. And obviously, following Jesus makes a difference, radical difference. If it doesn't, then we're not following him. We haven't met him. Thank you, sir, for the call. In the first half hour, my guest, Avi Lipkin, in the States now, but from Israel for decades, basically laid the blame on Republican and Democrat alike, basically laid the blame on our subservience to the oil trade and our mishandling of affairs in other Islamic countries, with all praise and recognition to our American servicemen and servicewomen who have given their lives and risk life and limb for our country, whether the cause is the right cause or not. We must always honor those, and those of you listening who've been directly affected by the wars. Is that affecting now our questioning, okay, do we just plunge in to a horrific, bloody civil war? And as our last caller just raised, why are men who have been notorious peaceniks in the past, often opposing military action, now so aggressively supporting it? Fair questions. Jason in Delaware, Ohio, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown, longtime listener and longtime lover of your books, and watched many of your debates on YouTube, and read your whole book cover to cover. Queer Thing Happened to America. Wonderful stuff.
Well, thank you.
I'm a former United States Marine, and I find myself weighing in on very, very strange ground today. I lost a friend in Iraq, and a former Marine staff sergeant. I was friends. He was my staff sergeant. And also another friend lost his legs in Iraq. So I find myself very, very, I do have a serious horse in this race, three horses, as a matter of fact. And so if I said yes, as a Christian and as a military person to Iraq, and he hadn't used his chemical weapons, Saddam, out on his own people since 1988, after 9/11, in my mind, it changes everything. And I think your former guest and all of us would probably, and the numbers would go up to 90%, if there ever was one of those weapons exploded at a Boston party or a Boston marathon and chemical weapons were used, if that ever happened, we would say, why didn't we go into Syria? And everybody would say, we should have went with guns a-blazing. I have to say yes to that. Just like I said yes, I want to be consistent. I believe in just war theory. I believe it wholeheartedly. I served for 4 years. And in a world post 9/11, even if we find that those were really chemical weapons, it's better safe than sorry to stop a crazy person than they be released on one of our cities. Thanks, Dr. Brown, for letting me talk.
Yes, Jason, thank you for weighing in. Thanks for the kind words. Thanks for persevering to read through a 700-page book of mine as well. I appreciate that. If you haven't seen some of the latest news, Russia says that they will be pushing Syria to surrender their chemical weapons. Oh, and by the way, before I go back to the phones, if some of you like to kind of uncover things, dig and discover stuff behind the scenes, there is an article that was published last week on Breitbart.com, which is one of the leading conservative political websites, and it was attributed to Vladimir Putin, and it's called "Let's Join One Another to Crush the Unholy, Unruly, Jihadi Muslims." And on the one hand, it's brilliantly written as if coming from Putin. On the other hand, it has so many extreme, harsh things to say that you can't imagine that a head of state would actually say this, but I have not read a lot about it. I haven't heard a lot of people talking about it and saying, hey, did you hear what Putin said or who wrote this article attributed to him? When you click on his name, it just says, I am Russia. That's the bio description. So for those who like to dig, did he actually write it? Did Putin actually write it? If so, whoa. And if not, who did write it? I have one contact I'm going to write to see if he can tell me. But if you want to uncover this for me, dig a little, do some detective work. Who wrote the article? Let's join one another to crush the unholy, unruly jihadi Muslims.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are going to go right back to your calls, just getting your feedback on Syria. And we need to be praying. We need to be praying again. I do not see this as fulfillment of Isaiah 17. If you look at the historical context, it's talking about God bringing judgment on Aram, which was ancient Syria, Damascus, the capital city, and Ephraim, northern kings of Israel, through the hand of the king of Assyria, who was then Tiglath-Pileser. And that brought terrible destruction on Syria and Ephraim, Israel, 2,700 plus years ago. But again, it is a complex, difficult situation, and so many factors involved, and I do not see any easy solution. And to me, to the extent that we could work together with other nations and get some agreement, and at the least, yeah, just put Syria under pressure to give its chemical weapons over, or put them under international control, as Russia's pushing. It's odd to be agree with Russia on different points, but complex, difficult. And then what is it motivating, ultimately, what is motivating our president wanting to go to war when he's campaigned in many ways as an anti-war candidate, wanting to get us out of Iraq and Afghanistan? 866-34-TRUTH, Christina in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Dr. Brown, just a couple of comments. I don't think it's wise to get involved in Syria because it doesn't seem like this administration has real purpose. There's no real outcome. It's a slap on the wrist. Assad has had ample time to prepare for an attack at this point, even, and it has massive consequences, not just I think for the U.S. but also for Israel, who's our ally, and you know. They're preparing. I just came back from the Middle East. They're preparing for, you know, they're getting gas masks. They're fortifying bomb shelters. I think it's a waste of money. It's too complex. I think if we're going to spend that kind of money, it's better used for humanitarian aid for the civilians and the refugees. And even on the Israeli borders, they're helping in a massive way with Syrians that are hurt and injured in field hospitals and all of that.
Yeah.
I think it's not wise.
By the way, Christina, just to mention that we have grads who are ministering, living now in northern Iraq, and they say that there are just thousands and thousands of refugees just living on the streets now in their cities and much more open to the gospel than even the native populace. Christina, I appreciate you weighing in. Obviously, if we knew how to get humanitarian aid to those suffering on both sides of this, the toll... death toll is horrific, and now children starving to death. It's a terrible, terrible picture of suffering, but it is Sunni Muslim versus Shiite Muslim. It is Saudi Arabia backing the Shiite so-called freedom fighters and Iran backing Syria and their regime, and in many cases, it's evil against evil. Christina, thank you for weighing in. I appreciate that. According to Aaron Klein, on the eve of a critical Capitol Hill discussion on Syria 2 days before his address to the nation, President Obama has offered Syrian President Bashar al-Assad a way out of any U.S. bombing campaign. Informed Middle Eastern intelligence officials tell Klein Online the U.S. passed a message to Assad through Russia offering a deal that would ensure against U.S. military action if the Syrian leader agrees to the following terms: serious political reforms, Assad will not be allowed to run in future presidential elections and agrees to step down from power. International Committee will supervise control of Syria's chemical weapons arsenal. That, of course, we've heard coming from Russia now. International Committee with U.S. participation will help rebuild the Syrian army and security services to guarantee participation from all factions of the population. Hey, it's a proposal. Is there any likelihood of any of this coming to pass? That's a whole other question, but it is a proposal. The sentiments in Israel, on the one hand, are stay out. We're fine. And if you attack Syria, Syria's just going to attack us or Iran's going to attack us. Why bother? On the other hand, many are saying, America, you better stand. You made a statement. You better stand and back it. Otherwise, Iran is going to think it can build its nuclear reactor, finish all it's doing, and develop nuclear warfare with no help from you. And Israel's going to have to fight them all alone. So there are some mixed feelings, but large amounts of Jewish constituency telling America, you better do something because you have spoken. All right, let's grab one last call in Dallas, Texas. Nate, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
No problem. Thank you for having me. Quick few comments on the idea of just war. This does not meet any of the requirements to be considered an act of just war to bomb Syria.
Give me one example of what would be a just war for those that haven't thought this through.
Well, the idea of just war is a concept dating back centuries, usually in the Judeo-Christian world, basically stating that there must be a reason for us to go into the war. We have an assured outcome of victory, or at least an exit strategy. We have to go to war to protect our nation and our citizens, and a couple other things of that nature.
Yeah, and basically, you would have you would have a clear situation of evil being done. For example, what the Nazis were doing to Jews and others in World War II and what their goals were. So a just war is often primarily for defensive purposes, but there's always a just cause. So the question is, what's the just cause here? Because if we fight against the government, then we're empowering people who are empowered by Al-Qaeda. So where's the just war? It's people murdering one another. Okay, but back to you, Nate.
Correct. So we don't really have a just war reason to go into this. Also, when you look at history, since roughly World War II, the U.S. has been involved in a major international conflict every 40 months. Every 40 months, like clockwork almost.
Mm.
And so when you look at that history, at least from a world perspective, the U.S. is no longer a world policeman or getting involved in things that are, you know, big. The U.S. is an aggressor now, or is on the global stage seen as an aggressor. That's every 40 months, and you can go through, and this is not just talking about the big things like the Korean War and Vietnam War, but this is also including things like the Somalia conflict and Sarajevo and a bunch of other little brush fires. But roughly every 40 months, the U.S. has been involved in an international conflict.
All right, interesting. Folks, those that want to look into this more, follow through. Look at Nate's chronology. Is it accurate? And if so, what is fueling the fire? Hey, Nate, wish I had more time to talk, but we are out of time. Thank you for the call. Thank you to all of you listening, all of you who've called over the last 2 hours and kept our phone lines buzzing. And let us be praying for God's will. God has a plan. God has a will. And God is the only one that can balance out these thousands of different issues affecting millions of individuals, and perhaps billions if this escalates. Lord, your will be done in Syria. Your kingdom come, your plan come to pass, and do it all for the good of the gospel. All right, friends, for your gift of any size to stand with us and help us, I want to send you a copy of Frank Viola's book, co-authored with Leonard Sweet, Jesus, a Theography, 424-page hardcover. An amazing read from Jesus in eternity past to eternity future. For your gift of any size, call right now, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, there are no clear lines of evil versus good in Syria, which means we should be fervently praying for the coming of the kingdom of God and the will of God for that nation.